All right, can you guess what book we're still in? Last book of the Bible, key book, book of Revelation. We're in chapter 17, probably another time or two in it. We have been moving slow, but folks, it's an abundance of stuff being revealed, and that's what the book of Revelation is. It's a revealing, not a concealing like some folks say, but a revealing, and it's to reveal because it is the revelation of Jesus Christ, and he is revealing to us how it's going to all turn out. And we've already crossed past the time. We were talking a while ago about the blessed hope. We believe the blessed hope is catching God's people out before the wrath of God begins to fall on planet Earth. But now we're deep into the book of Revelation, getting on over toward the end, and we're studying where the wrath of God is falling. You know, skeptics, through the years have said, well, where's God? Why don't he do something? Well, when he starts doing something, you're not going to like it too much. If you're here and it's coming down on you, it'll be the judgments of God. We live under his mercy, his long-suffering, his grace, his blessings today, and it looks like we kind of cry out with the prophets of old, Lord, don't you see all this bad stuff? And the prophets of old, they wept over it. Jeremiah was known as the weeping prophet. Different ones that God would let them hurt to feel as he felt about the sins of the world. And Ezekiel, for instance, had his wife die one day, prophet Ezekiel. And God told him a hard thing. He said, you get up in the morning, you go to work just like you always did. What was his work? He was a street preacher. He was a prophet. And God said, I'm not going to give you time off to mourn. You keep on working. Now, that seems awful hard on God, but God was saying, that's the way I feel. And that's the way he felt toward Israel. You know, we speak of the church as being the bride of Christ, which is true. But if you study the Old Testament closely, God often made the analogy that Israel was his wife. And so the wife of God, you might say, was Israel. And when God was hurt by them, Ezekiel was feeling that pain when his wife died. And God let some of the prophets really hurt. He let some of his wives be untrue to him because Israel was untrue to him. And he wanted them to feel that same pain. You know, as we move into these last chapters of the book of Revelation, we can see how it's going to turn out. We don't know the date on it. We got every right in the world to expect the blessed hope to come soon. I can't believe how bad we've gone downhill in 6 months. And what is another six going to bring? What is another year going to bring at the rate things are moving now? And so I don't know. But I do know this, it's going to turn out just like God tells us here it's going to turn out. And as we get to chapter 17, we find that the seven angels now have been commissioned by God to bring the seven last plagues of his wrath upon the earth. So we had that back in chapter 16. We move to chapter 17 and a description of what is happening. I'm reviewing a little bit, of course. We have seen several times in the book of Revelation where God would jump ahead and speak of the judgment on Babylon, or the here called the great city. And so we started identifying that and asking about it a little bit. And we are into that somewhat. I haven't gone verse by verse so much in chapter 17 as to pick out some high places. And I probably will do that again, but let's remember what the picture is that we're seeing here in chapter 17. Remember now that God's wrath is falling on the tribulation period, the end of it. That's roughly 7 years after the church is caught out, and God begins in that last 3.5 years on the Antichrist kingdom that's taken over. God begins to judge it from heaven, begins to pour out his wrath, his plagues upon earth. So what you have is two kingdoms fighting. That's what we got today, folks. The lines have never been any clearer to identify. Somebody says, well, America's divided. It's, listen, we ought to divide over what's right and what's wrong. Amen. We ought to divide over the Antichrist attack that's coming on everything holy. Especially do we see that in America. And we say, well, America's just a small part of the world. Yeah, but the world's following America. And we should be the example as a Christian nation. And yet, often now in the news, you'll hear this word, post-Christian. Post means past. And so what they're saying is, it used to be. Used to be. When President Obama was in, he got up and said, we're not a Christian nation. And he began to name Muslims and others. No, we were founded as a Christian nation. And we have those that have come in, and yes, it is and has changed for the wrong. But we still, in all our founding documents, all of our true history, defines very clearly. In fact, there is a decision made by the Supreme Court many years ago that we were a Christian nation. And we still are, technically, but practically now, we live in the cancel culture, they call it. And if you stand for anything moral and right and scriptural and biblical, they want to cancel you out. Want to say you don't exist. We'll steal your power. We'll steal your ability to communicate and state your feelings. One of the biggest freedoms that is really obviously lost right now is the freedom of speech. And folks, when we lose them, we don't get them back. And right now, even as I hate to say this, but even as I teach the book of Revelation, I have to think, what should I not say? Used to be as a young preacher, I said, God, give me something to say. Now I pray, God, keep me from saying too much. That's the times it has moved and has changed. Because that's the area that we live in. You and I live in a little different world. If we believe the Bible, if we associate with Christian people, His church, we live in a little bit different world than what the world has become. What it used to be is one thing. What it is now, something else. Big difference. So here in chapter 17, we were identifying the great city mentioned in chapter 16. We found all the identifying marks of it. We found that it set on seven hills, and we recognized history pointing out what city that would be. And it's a city that has a religious organization in it that is actually a state within the state. It's walled off. It has its own, what we would call, police force or guard. And it is very secretive. Great secrets involved in it. In fact, if you studied it out, you'd be shocked. And it's in those areas that I'll get canceled if I say too much. Yet the truth is out there for you to dig up if you want to dig it up. I'm going to ask you to jump to a verse that we looked at before. Down in verse 5, we see this woman on the beast. Her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. See the great big print in your King James Bible? If you want to understand today why there's so much attack on the King James Bible, it's because of what it exposes. Now, most of us, if I ask you to raise your hand, have you ever read the Bible through? I'm sure you'd raise your hand. By the way, excuse my throat this morning. That's not such a big deal. I'm more concerned how much of it did you meditate and learn than I am did you just speed through some stuff and then didn't even know what you read. There's a big difference. One thing is for man's glory to be able to say I done something. The other is whether you're really working and meditating with God on it. But if I would ask you to raise your hand, if you ever read the Bible through, most of you probably would. But then I could ask you one, and I suspect there'd just be very few hands that would be raised. If I ask you, have you ever read the long foreword in the front of the King James Bible written by the men God used to translate it into English under the authority of King James? Have you ever read that foreword? It's fairly long. The foreword is actually to the king, but it's to the people. And if you read it, you'd find out that those learned men, and they were learned, many of them speak as many as six, seven languages. They were the smartest. So how'd they get so smart? Well, they didn't have a TV. That's just my opinion. They were not told what to think. They thought on their own. And their nights were not given to it. They were given to study. So they were the learned men. They were the probably so much head and shoulders above what we'd call the learned men today, we couldn't even imagine. But in that forward to the king, they identified the group that the book of Revelation, right here in chapter 17, is talking about. And all the theories about the man of sin, the Antichrist, we studied about in chapter 13, and his kingdom now that God is beginning to bring his wrath upon, they identify who they think that man of sin is in the forward. So now, instead of going home and watching TV this afternoon, get out an old King James that's got the forward in the front of it and read it and see if you can spot what the preacher was talking about this morning. I know you won't. You'll get sleepy and take a nap, but you could do that. Amen. And that's a little bit of a light there. That's one reason that, the King James Bible is, they kept bringing out the perversions. Rewrite it. And yet every one of them would claim when they rewrote it, this is the King James Revised. No, it wasn't. It was changed. It was different. And somebody wrote a book, Things That Are Different Are Not the Same. And they're not. Anyway, pick up with me here. And we're going to jump just a little bit ahead now to John's on the Isle of Patmos. He's receiving this vision from God. And in verse 6, I saw the woman, this woman riding the beast, drunken with the blood of the saints, with the blood of the martyrs, not just any martyrs, but the martyrs of Jesus, Christian. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Now, John was shocked. When he says, I wondered, he was shocked. He was imprisoned on the Isle of Patmos by Dominion, the Roman emperor. He was in the day and age where Christians could still be thrown to the lions. When they were being sometimes burned at the stake and other punishments. And Fox's Book of Martyrs will tell you all about so much of that. So he would not be shocked to know that Rome, pagan Rome, was killing Christians. He had barely escaped. History tells us, if it's right or not, that John the Revelator was, they tried to kill him, that they actually tried to boil him in oil, and somehow the oil didn't get hot enough or God intervened, and somehow or another he gets imprisoned on the Isle of Patmos because, of course, God was not through with him. God intended to give him the book of Revelation that we're studying now. So John, as he sees the picture God has given him here, he wonders, he's shocked, and the angel asks him why he's shocked. And the angel said unto me, verse 7, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. When they behold the beast, here again, that was, and is not, and yet is. Now, I'm going to give you just something quick here. You study it deeper. If you remember the Last Supper, you remember that Judas betrayed the Lord, and how he betrayed him with a kiss, and how the Lord told him at the supper, what thou doest, doest quickly. And he went out to do that. And but there's another verse there that says that Satan incarnated or came in to Judas. He came in before Judas kissed the Lord on the cheek. Judas was a plant, if you please, by the devil in the midst of the disciples. For instance, if you study the book of John, quite interesting, John chapter 6, longest chapter, I believe, in John. And it's got 66 verses, 666. And you get to the last of those chapter of John, you find where Jesus makes the statement, have not I chosen you 12, and one of you is the devil. Judas never fooled Jesus. He fooled the other disciples. He pretended to be what he was not. And he was planted by the devil. He was Satan incarnate. He was a forerunner and picture of the Antichrist. The Antichrist will be Satan incarnate. And then when it makes a statement like this, the beast that was and is not and yet is, opens up a lot of thinking in this way. Judas was, at the time John is writing Revelation, he is not. He is not now. And yet is. Judas is going to have a return, just like Jesus is going to have a return. The devil is the counterfeiter. Judas is going to return. Now, well, you say, I think they buried him, you know, he fell and they buried him in Potter's Field. All that's true, his physical body. But the spirit inside of him, Satan that incarnated him, will return in the man we'll call the Antichrist. So when he says here, the beast was, and goes on to tell us that is not, we don't see him now, yet is. So he will have a return. And that's why when the Antichrist shows up, he'll be more than a bad politician. We've had plenty of them that could qualify far as their sins go. But Judas is going to be, was more than that and will be more than that. And the Antichrist is more than just a bad politician and a bad deceiver and all of that. He's going to have some supernatural part about him. Now, yes, his physical body somebody will attempt to kill him. I've talked to you about this two or three times, because I would not be surprised to hear something in the news almost any time that would help us to realize, if we're beginning to see that may be the Antichrist, then we got more reason at all to look for the real Christ from above. So, yes, Judas will have a second coming, so to speak. And it's an interesting thing as we go to the real Lord's Prayer. I'm not going to ask you to turn to it. I'll never get through with this if I keep running references, but in John 17 is the real Lord's Prayer. That's where Jesus is praying to the Father. So Jesus is the Lord praying to the Lord. One part of the Trinity praying to the other part. Jesus in John 17 is praying to the Father. In John 17, he's remembering me and you, ones that will believe in the future. That's me and you. We've believed. But in that John 17, Jesus makes a statement to the Father that's very enlightening concerning Judas and the Antichrist. He says this to the Father, I've kept all that you've given me. Talking about the disciples, the chosen ones. But he tells the whole truth. He doesn't leave this out. And he says this to the Father, I've kept them all except one. He identifies the one. Except the son of perdition. Who was the son of perdition? Who was it that was lost out of the 12? Judas was lost. Jesus calls him the son of perdition in John 17. Now, as we read the book of Revelation, we find out his ultimate end is perdition. He's going to perdition. And so in John 17, we identified that Judas is the son of perdition. So we're getting some real clues here about how it's going to unfold here in the end. And as we study, John is told here to look for this one that is, he was, he is not, and yet he is. Now I come back up to verse 6. I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, identifying which martyrs. And when I saw her, I wondered with great wonder or great admiration. He was shocked about it, because it wasn't pagan Rome. He saw that he's being charged with having all the blood of the saints, all the martyrs. But it's religious. That would be a shocker to John. But he sees a religious order a false church, a false religion. And you know, folks, you've heard good preachers for years preach that it would be a one world religion. One world government, that'd be the Antichrist. One world religion. And in chapter 13, we found out there was a religious leader called the false prophet. He would come and point to the Antichrist, probably especially about the time of an assassination attempt that's going to take place on him. He's going to wound him in the arm and put out one of his eyes. And that religious leader who has a voice reaches around the world is going to say, that's the man, worship him. And as we studied in chapter 13, the whole world is going to worship him and they're going to receive his mark. As we get closer to the building of the government today, now I'm not telling you where to or not, your own decision whether you take a vaccination or not. But there's a time coming the government's going to want to put a mark on you and you won't have any choice. You can't buy or sell. You can't travel. You're going to be persecuted greatly if you don't take the mark. Now, that's future yet. I don't know how far, but we're seeing an awful tendency today of the government to take over completely everything, even what you think. In our generation, we have learned to hear about the thought police, haven't we? You've heard me joke about it. It's no joke. I've said, if you're going to kill somebody, tell them you love them just before you kill them. Otherwise, you'll be charged with a hate crime. Now, making a little fun over that, but that's where we've moved to. I mean, some ridiculous stuff going on in the courts okaying it today that is unbelievable. So anyway, though, this religious order, this false church, this false prophet is being charged by God of having the blood of the martyrs. Now, biblical interpreters and good preachers can disagree and we can see this and that in it, but we know what it says. We're just interpreting somewhat who it could be. Now, the great city here we've already identified. I didn't give you a test on it, but I think most of you would have passed. The great city has particular colors that are identified with it. You've seen them on TV at weddings and funerals. It sits on seven hills. That's a geographical location that is identified separate to it, none other. And then the actions of it. The actions of it through history is bloody. It is more ridiculous than you would ever think. Now, here's the excuse. They'll say, well, some of our leaders were wrong and some of them were good. Yeah, they were definitely that. When I speak of the Pope, how many of you know, if you study the history of the popes, you really got some eye-opening stuff coming. At one time, there was two popes claiming to be popes. And each one of them was pointing to the other and saying, he's the Antichrist, not me. Oh, that's history. You can read it. In fact, let me see if I can come close on this. 897, somewhere in there, early on, 8th, 9th century. One pope died, and the other pope that took over, followed him, had him dug up, brought in to the altar, so to speak, throne, seat, there's a seat there. Dressed him in his royal robes, even though his body was decaying and had probably still stinking, but dug him out of the grave and dressed him in his royal outfit, set him on the throne, and then the present pope, Pope Sixtus it was, brought railing accusations against him for all the evil that he'd done, held a mock court, so to speak, only it was for real. Dead pope, can't answer your back, stinking. It had been a stinking court, wouldn't it? But anyway, we got some that stunk since, but that would definitely have been literal. Anyway, he accused him all the way. And finally, they took his royal robes off. They'd put on the dead body, decaying body. And they dressed him in a pauper's clothes. and buried him again. And they cut off, before they buried him, they cut off these three fingers off the skeleton. Why? Well, it's those three fingers that the Pope blesses you with. You've seen it all the time, haven't you? If you want to get in the archives of Landmark, you can go way back where I preached years ago about the... Oh, I'm getting off on this. Folks, it's hard to just go on. Years ago, I preached about the sign of the bowman. Nimrod was the bowman. He was the forerunner of all the Antichrist. If you get your papal blessing, you got the sign of the bowman. You got the sign that will be under the kingdom of the Antichrist. So one pope has three fingers cut off, the blessing fingers cut off the skeleton, dress him back in pauper's clothes, put him back in the ground. I guess that's where they put him. Now, their own history about this verse here is so, this verse says it so concisely. So when interpreters like good preachers, they say, well, that city's New York. No, New York cannot be charged with all the martyrs. They cannot be charged with all the bloodshed. Yes, the great city. A lot of stuff identifies with a place like New York, commercial center in chapter 18. We'll talk about that as we get to it. But this verse separates us out. This history is identifiable. You can read it. Not many people do, but it is recorded. And greater details are shut up in the archives of the Vatican, and you can't get in there to see them. But how obviously clear these verses are if you know a little bit about it, how they fit, how they identify. And yes, that can get you in trouble for saying it. Again, I ask you to go back and read the foreword of the King James translators to the King, and you'll find out that they knew and who they called the man of sin. So we get to the book of Revelation. It's a revealing. It is an opening up. It is a showing you how things turn out. And so if there's any one book in the Bible that'll help you interpret the rest of the Bible, it's know how things come out. Yes, there's a fake Christ coming, a counterfeit Christ coming. He's going to have a kingdom. The whole world is going to worship him. The big world church is going to identify him as it's right to worship him. And the penalty for not receiving his mark, we read it, we studied it in chapter 13, is to have heads chopped off. Now, right now, they're giving you incentives to go out and get a vaccination. $100 in New York. Free marijuana in another place or two, several different things. Now they're kind of turning that to put the pressure on about taking away your banking services. And I talked to somebody this week and they were shocked when I told them that threat was being made, because they know what it would do to cripple their business, what it would cripple to do their own personal life, what it would cripple even churches to do. All right, I got off on that again. But truth of the matter is, these verses are revealing stuff that is just taboo, and being called by the administration today is disseminating false information. That's the reason you get kicked off of Facebook, or you get kicked off of some of the line stuff. You said something that didn't agree with the standard policy. That's so un-American. America was always the home of the free. We had free speech. We had free right to travel. We had free right to bear arms. And right on down the line, those freedoms, one by one, they're finding a way. If you saw, I'll quit teaching. I got 1 minute. I'm going to say this. If you saw anything about it this week, the administration openly admitted that the Supreme Court just ruled they could not do what they are doing. Anybody remember that this week? But in fact, the president himself said that he couldn't, but he did. and some I know some, and I know Brother Earl Lee knows too. Some of our good Christian lawyers have already filed suit. Now, Supreme Court, are you going to, is that the rule? Or are you going to let them ignore it? And right now, it looks like they're going to ignore it. All right. No end to it, folks. Used to, when I went to the movies, they had a Westerns on, and every time they had a shoot 'em up cowboy movie, I could get 9 cents. I watched it. But also along on that Saturday movie, they had a running serial. It was very short. And the hero of the serial would be always left in trouble, so he had to come back the next week to see if he survived it. Anybody remember that? And I remember the statement. They'd always say, continued next week. Well, that's what I'm telling you. This is continued next week. Time's up, all right?